listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Will they stay or will they go? International teams across the world are able to book their places on the flight to Brazil 2014 tonight as the last few games of World Cup qualification get set to take place tonight and next Tuesday. Managerial fates, players' dream opportunities, and a chance to go to the biggest football tournament on the planet all lie in the balance in the next few days. Welcome to World Football Daily. Friday, the 11th of October, is a day for everybody in international football to remember. It's the night where plenty of sides, as I say, can go for the opportunity to make their way to the World Cup. Will Montenegro put their name back in the hat with a win against England? Can Belgium secure their place back at a World Cup with arguably the best young side the nation has ever seen? Those questions and more, including will El Tri be able to get a win in the Azteca against Panama and finally show some form in the CONCACAF hexagonal round of qualification? That those questions and many more will be answered tonight and on Tuesday. But for now, on World Football Daily, we are going to continue talking about it right until kickoff here on Friday's show. A huge weekend. It just doesn't get much bigger here in terms of international football, aside from the World Cup itself. And I think this is when we start getting caught up in the kind of the magic of the World Cup. You know, when we get to crunch time, I've been very lackadaisical with kind of getting into the coverage of these World Cup qualifiers. You know, until you get down to when games really mean something. You know, first group games, it's all very much feeling each other out, except in South America, where, of course, one big group makes it so exciting. We were talking about that yesterday on the show. You know, you're waiting throughout CONCACAF qualification to get down to the hexagonal round, and then business really starts to pick up. These group games, as I say, the groups are so stacked in the favour of the big European sides that you really get the feeling that most of them will get to the World Cup no matter what. It's when you get little bits thrown into the mixer, such as England's group with the likes of Poland, Montenegro, Ukraine, all able to qualify along with England from that group, all able to top the group as well as we go into the final two games. It's when you start to get really excited, start to get nervous as well about international football. A man who is not nervous, of course, will be joining me later on, Rafa G, to talk about the US men's national team for a last time as they head to take on Jamaica tonight in a game that really is just going to be smooth sailing for Jurgen Klinsmann and his men. It doesn't matter. They want to keep their run of being unbeaten on home soil in competitive games continuing, but really, it's they've got the job done, as I said yesterday, and it's a very, very nice period of time for US international football. We are also joined on the line right now by our guest for today. He is a man who does know all things about Major League Soccer and about US soccer in general, but he's also a man who is far more at home in the Northeast, covering Sunderland and Newcastle and the Premier League. And of course, we're going to talk to him today about a little bit of England as well. Joining me on the show right now, right here, is Mr. Kristen Hennage to talk to us about all things Gus Poyet and all things England. Kristen, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. Always love it when you come and join us, especially on a Friday. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. The weather is terrible up in Newcastle, but I'm good.
I tell you what, it's terrible down south here as well, mate. So I wouldn't worry about that. Your Newcastle weather has filtered its way down to us, unfortunately, here in the south. So I'm looking forward to a dingy weekend being warmed up by the international football coming up tonight, this evening. England taking on Montenegro in at Wembley. Still tickets on sale. Are you surprised these big games against Poland and Montenegro, there are still tickets on sale? Because you would have thought this is, of all the crunch games that we've seen for England, these are two huge games that almost take us back to 1994 and Graham Taylor's failure to get us to a World Cup.
Yeah, it's a massive game for England and for Montenegro. The cost, I think, is perhaps an issue. You have to try and look at the socioeconomic factors on this, I think, and that people perhaps don't have as much money as normal. And it's going to be on television, which, again, diminishes perhaps the desire to head out on a dreary Friday night and try and get across to Wembley.
Oh, no. Surely the best place to be on a dreary Friday night is a couple of pints and a couple of mates down at a football ground somewhere in the UK. There will, of course, be a lot of expectation on England tonight. And we'll briefly discuss England's chances this evening against Montenegro before we get into all things Gus Poyet and his appointment. Hodgson said that he wants the side to go out and play fancy football, if you will. He wants them to go out and play football rather than the disappointing performance that we saw against the Ukraine in their last outing that got slammed by people here in the UK. Do you think we will see England come out? Obviously, there's not as many injury problems as the last outing for the national team.
I think you have little choice in that instance, because at least with the Ukraine game, you can contextualise it and say, well, it was away from home, Ukraine, a very good side at home, very difficult to beat. And you entered that knowing what you wanted. You wanted a draw so that you could move forward and target this game against Montenegro as the one that you wanted to win. So he's done the first part, and it's kind of like, you know, promising to do your chores after you've been out to play. Now you have to do the difficult bit, I would argue, and come out and play a Montenegro side who I think have more than enough motivation for this game. This is a country of, I think, 600,000 people, give or take. That's half the size of Trinidad and Tobago, who at present are the smallest nation to ever be in a World Cup. So if you can imagine what that potentially means for Montenegro in terms of getting to this competition and then not just etching themselves in history, but forging an early part of their own personal identity following their break from Serbia, you could argue there are more motivations for Montenegro to get this done tonight than there are England.
For England, in this attacking lineup, we've been a lot of talk about Daniel Sturridge and his inexperience with England. But do you think, on his current form in the Premier League at the moment, is it impossible for Hodgson to ignore playing Sturridge and to give him that starting frontman role?
Well, I don't think Michael Owen was terribly experienced when he burst past those Argentinian defenders in '98, was he? Would he have done that perhaps more efficiently if he'd been more experienced? I think it's something of a misnomer sometimes that you need that experience. I can see why he's looking for it in his goalkeeper, because, again, that's a position that very much defines the game, because if you fail as a goalkeeper, there's a strong chance you've let a goal in, whereas a midfielder can make a mistake or a striker can. I think Hodgson touched on that at the weekend, and I completely agree with him. But for Daniel Sturridge, a man who, you know, I caught a couple of weeks ago in Sunderland, he's in good form, he's confident, and I think he's got some wonderful assets, not just his dribbling and his pace, but just his brain and his movement. He's very clever, and I think that in games like this, where it's going to not just be tight, but it's going to be a case of Montenegro wanting to be stern and be stable and strong from the back, it's brilliant if you can call upon a player who can be that sort of spontaneous with his play and give you that extra little something that perhaps other players can't.
You mentioned Joe Hart there, Christian, and do you get the feeling that he's playing for his England job in these games, especially if there's a mistake tonight that proves costly for England? Is his role going to be up for grabs against Poland, do you think? How much pressure's on him going in?
Well, I think you could very easily try and draw comparisons to Paul Robinson in Croatia all those years ago with the rather unfortunate pitch bubble. That was very much the beginning of the end for him at England. I don't see the same for Hart. I think he's just in bad form. I personally was never that sold on Robinson. He was good, but I felt like he had already hit his peak at the age he was at then. With Hart, I think there's still a lot more to come. I think he's just, as you say, in bad form. And the problem is, for a goalkeeper, when you're in bad form, there's no real place to hide, because, like we just said there, if you make a mistake, in Hart's case against, you know, Munich, for example, the fact that his wrists weren't very strong, then it's going to show up on the goals column. And that's a really unfortunate thing, but it's also, you know, the life of a goalkeeper. You live and die by those successes or failures. I think that this will be an amazing test of his character. And in some ways, if he fails miserably, then it's unfortunate for him, but then you know where you stand with him and you know what you can expect from him and what level he's at. Equally, if he passes it with flying colours and produces some wonderful saves, then he's had a great opportunity to fortify himself. You have to give these players the chance to really define themselves. You can't... In many ways, I'm pleased that Hodgson hasn't tried to cover him away and bring someone else in, because I think this is a moment for Joe Hart to earn himself redemption.
It's the pressure's all on him. The pressure, of course, on England in general in these next two games. Kristen, let's be blunt with this. With the Montenegro side, with a lot to prove, with spatterings of high-quality talent in their side, do England get the job done tonight nice and securely? Are we going to be on panic stations for the whole 90 minutes? Or is it going to be even worse? Are Montenegro going to get a result at Wembley?
I think England are always on panic stations, winning or losing. that's just the mentality of English football at present, unfortunately. I think they'll win, though. And that's not a slant on Montenegro. They've got some wonderful talent, not even just up front with Vucinic and Jovetic. You go back through that team, there's some very good players in there. Savic, who I think has really fixed his career since leaving Manchester City. And you would think, yeah, that, you know, just because there aren't a great deal of players at clubs perhaps near the top of Europe's game, then it should be easy. I don't think it will, but I think they'll get it done because people are expecting them to slip up. It's kind of a weird paradigm with England that when you expect them to fall backwards and stumble the most is often when they perform and often when they bring something out, like the European Championships against Sweden. I think we all expected a draw at best, and yet they pull out a performance like they did. And I think that's just the Jekyll and Hyde beast that is English football.
It's a big game for England tonight, but there's also been some big news coming out of your neck of the woods, Christian, this week. Obviously, Sunderland getting rid of Paolo Di Canio what seems like months ago, but of course only a week or so ago. Gustavo Poyet has been appointed this week as the new Sunderland manager. We spoke a little bit about him. Have you had any change of thoughts, though, since our last discussion about Gustavo Poyet coming in and taking the reins at Sunderland? What's your initial impression?
I think he's the best option that they had. René Mullenstein was another one who was mentioned because obviously Di Matteo ruled himself out quite early. The problem with Mullenstein was he had a brief spell at Bromby, and by all accounts he was slightly eccentric, shall we say. He repainted the tunnel from Bromby's yellow to green because he thought it would calm the players down as they walked out. He famously gave them a team talk during a half-time Europa League game against Frankfurt in which he asked them to pick an animal. And it was, again, it was all very surreal kind of stuff that one of his former players had written about in a book that he'd written after his career. And it didn't really paint him as the best potential manager they could find. Poyet doesn't really have that. I mean, he's been compared to Di Canio for obvious reasons. He's 45, same age as Di Canio. He's coming from the lower leagues, having won a title, admittedly. His was League One, Di Canio's was League Two. I think the fact that he said very early on, don't compare me, is because he realises how strong the comparison is. I think that really it's just a superficial one. If you look at the two as individuals, the only detractor that Poyet has at present is Vicente, the old Valencia winger. And he called him egotistical and said that he would laugh if you missed a shot in training and that's not how you behave as a manager. I think that really you have to give that situation some context and say that Vicente had been at Brighton for 2 years, hadn't played a lot because of injury, and thus was released. And I think, to a degree, there was an element of bitterness in his assessment of Poyet. The players that he's played for all seem to speak quite highly of him, bar that one instance. In fact, Steve Harper, the old Newcastle goalkeeper, has been incredibly glowing about him and his man management, and thinking that he won't be fazed by the goldfish bowl or the pressure cooker that is northeast football, especially given he's got to face Newcastle in his second game, which is incredibly difficult place to put him in, knowing that they need points as well, irrespective of the fact it's actually at the Stadium of Light. And I think tactically he's more evolved than Di Canio. Di Canio was very simple. He wanted to just play 4-4-2 and be quite direct with it. Not long, but direct in terms of getting it from front to back. Di Canio is a bit more patient, a bit more evolved. The only problem I would perhaps pin on him, and it's one that Di Canio had as well, was that he's quite stubborn in terms of that 4-3-3 is his plan. And he was often criticised at Brighton for the fact he wouldn't adapt, he wouldn't change, that he just was so strict to the mantra of keeping it on the ground, passing the ball, and that was it. And for 2 years just over, they didn't win a game after falling behind. Yet you flip that on its head and say, well, they also never lost a game under him when they took the lead. The problem is at present, Sunderland have only taken the lead twice this season in their seven games. So you have to perhaps think, well, there's going to be need to be minute changes. The blessing comes in the fact that Poyet actually said that, you know, it's going to be about getting points first, and then we'll try and ingrain our philosophy into this side. So he's showing, I would argue, a more understanding of the situation than Di Canio did.
Now, talking of understanding, that's a tenuous link, but I'm going to use it, Kristen. There, a lot of the talk about the communication in the dressing room and the difficulties there's been, I mean, that's going to be a real challenge for Poyet. But considering, obviously, born in Uruguay, he's played at Chelsea and Tottenham, where there have been numerous different nationalities in dressing rooms, do you think he comes in more prepared for this sort of situation, for the multilingual, for communicating to players that can't communicate with themselves at the moment?
I think he does. You know, Di Canio spoke Italian and English. His English was a little bit like Trapattoni's. It was very fast and full of more words than it needed, but it was understandable. Poyet speaks very good English. He spent time in France very early in his career before going back to River Plate in Uruguay, and thus speaks French. He also speaks Italian, English, and Spanish. He did joke that he speaks a little bit of English too, but the fact that he speaks those languages makes it easier, and he doesn't think it'll be a problem. Now, as we mentioned before, Di Canio's talked about how there was a huge problem for him trying to explain even just the most basic of terms to his players in English, and they had to be condensed from squeeze up to just up. The fact that Poirier speaks four languages makes it so much easier for him to converse and explain what he wants while these players learn English. The only issue I would perhaps put forward is it's not going to change on the pitch, because just because he speaks the language doesn't mean that his players now all do. So it's how they communicate will perhaps be interesting to watch. I'm not sure what he's going to do. Perhaps he'll get them all to learn bits of each other's language and whatever fits best. But he'll be able to vault the obstacle to a degree, but unfortunately for Sunderland, it's going to take time for it to stop being an issue.
Surely they can all learn, you know, push out in Italian, Spanish, English and French. Surely that would be possible at Sunderland, but who knows how they will deal with the communication problems on the pitch. What about the mystery that surrounds, obviously, there's been plenty of rumours about why Poyet ended up falling out and leaving, being sacked from Brighton and Hove Albion. Does that create any mystery and therefore an element, not of, I don't want to say mistrust, but a little bit of extra kind of thrown into the mix of a new manager coming into a side with the rumours that we've heard as well, the players, will there be a slight kind of adjustment period, maybe a little longer because of this?
Well, I think the situation at Brighton was, again, the details will never be fully known, unfortunately. The outcome of that tribunal is still to be decided, and whether he's going to push ahead with it. From what I can ascertain, though, whenever he was linked with a better job, he was more than happy to discuss it. I don't think that's the most respectful way to go about things, but that's the way he chose to do it. Now, the club's chairman, a chap named Tony Bloom, said that after he had left, he actually asked to leave before the playoff game against Crystal Palace that kind of lost and really not only presented a microcosm of his failings, but was the tipping point. It had kind of hit its crescendo. I think his ambitions and Brighton's ability to match them were no longer parallel. It wasn't the most, how should we put it, the most civil of departures from a football club ever. It was quite acrimonious. And the fact that he learned about it live on BBC television while being a pundit, I imagine, didn't help that situation at all. But I don't think it will carry over. I think that, again, these players don't want relegation on their resume come the end of the season or come the end of the year. You've got Giaccarini, who, again, is trying to keep his mind on Italy's World Cup campaign. Jozy Altidore, another player who's obviously trying to keep his mind on his international prospects along with a few others. So they want to have as good a season as possible just to give them that momentum going into Brazil. And so, again, it's not really the time to sit and question, well, you know, why was he sacked? What kind of guy is he? You just have to ignore all that. It's very much, I guess, like starting a new relationship. You have to kind of ignore the previous and just focus on what's in front of you. And in this case, it's a good young manager who wants to play football in a way that I think is conducive to the talents that he has at present. And really, he's going to be the guy, the only person right now who's going to help them try and get out of the situation that they're in.
It's going to be a big uphill task for Gus Poyet at Sunderland. A disappointing start to their season and a disappointing time under Paolo Di Canio. Poyet coming in, many people saying that he's just like Di Canio, but we will live to see that come the end of the season. Kristen, before I let you go, I've got to ask you one thing about Major League Soccer here, because I know you're a man of world football and take a vested interest in the US game. Portland's loss on Wednesday night, we're going to touch on it later on in the show, but do you worry that this is a sign, Seattle's loss even, do you worry that this is a sign from Seattle that when playoffs come, they're still going to be stumbling on the big occasion? Because that was a chance for them to book their place in the Major League Soccer playoffs against a fellow Cascadia Cup rival.
Yeah, that and the game against Colorado weren't exactly the best situations for them to present their title credentials, really. I think, it's a mental inhibition. You look at the goals, as brilliant as Kakuta Mana was the other night in taking those finishes, from a defensive standpoint, if you're analysing that with the Pro Zone guys the next day, you're really not pleased with that. John Kennedy, Hurtado in particular, was just very naive. For Mana's second, following the ball like that and leaving such a, you know, gulf in the middle of the pitch. But then also you have to, you know, question Yedlin for not cutting across and giving him the kind of cover that you expect from your fullback. It's little mistakes that I think are often born out of that pressure that you talk about. I watched the game and I remember, you know, early on, Ross Fletcher explaining how pivotal this game was, that they could book their playoff place, that they could do so many great things, the Cascadia Cup, as you mentioned. And I think when that was such the focus and there was very little given to the threat that Vancouver, present, and how brilliant at times they've been this season themselves, unstable and very inconsistent, you had to worry a little bit, because there was just every chance that when you framed a game like that, Vancouver were going to show up and spoil the party, and they most certainly did that.
They really did for the Seattle Sounders. Kristen, we will have to talk with you about Major League Soccer a little more as we continue through to the playoffs, and a big thanks for you to joining us here on WFD today to talk about all things England, all things Sunderland and Gus Poyet, and a tad bit of MLS as well, mate. We always enjoy your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Mr. Kristen Hennage joining us here on World Football Daily, discussing the ins and outs of England's big game against Montenegro this evening at Wembley. It's a massive night of football in general across the board. And Kristen giving us the heads up on Roy Hodgson and his thoughts on how England are going to approach this one, how they're going to do. And also having a look at Gus Poyet. What a big opportunity for him. Premier League managerial job, what a tough task he's got ahead of him as well. And I tell you what, those stories surrounding Poyet's exit from Brighton are always going to be the stuff of myth and legend. If you haven't heard it, go and find some website sources. We're not going to discuss it here on WFD, but go and find some website stories about it, because there are so many rumours that have flown about it, but all around one main incident, if you will. We will talk about that never on World Football Daily, but we will talk about Gus Poyet and his Sunderland side, and of course all things international football, and we will continue to talk about it here on WFD as we continue through into next week. Big thanks there to our almost regular English football pundit, Mr. Kristen Hennage, joining us here on WFD, talking about Gus Poyet and, of course, England's chances of making it to Brazil 2014, hours away today from crunch time for Roy Hodgson's men. And really, it's taking a side seat, really, to what's coming imminently here on World Football Daily, crunch time as Rafa Gonzalez gets on the mic and joins me today, man. How are we doing today, Raf?
Again, living the dream. Nobody can stop me, man. I am one with the chi that is internal fantasticness, man.
You're an om level in kind of that Zen feeling. You know, you're right. Om.
Yeah, pretty much.
Legs
man.
Crossed, floating about 6 inches off the off the floor. You know, hands.
Yeah, sure.
Touching.
Hey, I really do have to apologize, man. I got a little sidetracked this morning. I know I got on our call a little bit late.
Unbelievable.
And,
I know.
And there was blaring evidence of this, but I was kind of fumbling about, you know, before we, you know, you called, and I stumbled on Facebook, and this fantastic music just was bestowed upon me, and you're gonna have to, you know, tell me more about it. But I just got done listening to Los Colorados, Let It Be, and it looks like a bunch of Polacks or
Ukrainians.
You know,
can't
guys
you tell by the shirts? They're wearing Ukrainian football shirts, man.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, so I get that. So I guess some sort of Eastern European thing. I watched it. I wasn't really watching it. You know, I only kind of saw the first. Like
ladies
5 minutes.
Sorry, mate.
No worries. I only saw like the first, like, you know, 15 seconds or something. And then I just started scrolling down and I just kept listening. I thoroughly enjoyed it though. Just please tell me more. Are Los Colorados?
Anybody wants to get involved in this? There's no football link in this in any way, shape or form, by the way. But this is aside from maybe the Ukrainian football shirts that they were wearing in the video that Raf has been watching today. Los Colorados are a band that we stumbled upon at university. A friend of mine came running into my room. He's like, "Man, Juice, man, he was actually Spanish. I'm not trying to be insulting or anything like that, but he was like, "Oh man, Juice, man, you've got to look at this. You've got to watch this, man. You've got to watch this." And I was like, "Okay, Alejandro, like, what are we looking at here?" He's like, "Oh, just check it out, man. It's so funny. And he types in polka hot and cold. And I'm like, "Okay, what?" And it comes up with this video of kind of four guys sat in this room, just a plain green room. It's not like green screen or anything. It's just a plain green room. It's a polka band. And they do a polka version of that Katy Perry song. You know, you're hot and you're cold, you're yes and you're no.
No way.
And ever since then, that has been kind of a memory from uni, a song that, you know, we kind of cling on to as a group of friends. You know, we always enjoy, you know, when you get back together and you're kind of reminiscing about uni days and stuff, and you're like, oh, you know, let's put on that hot and cold song. And today I was incredibly bored at my job. I've literally had very little to do today, which has been excellent. The unfortunate thing is that there's been very little kind of going on in terms, because we're at the build-up stage now for all these World Cup qualifiers, that you can tell by the a lot of the reports that are coming out on football websites at the moment. You know, they're tenuous things, like it's been 20 years since England won without a Manchester United player, and that's because, you know, there's been a Manchester United player pretty much in the side for the last 20 years because, you know, they've been producing some quality English players. So I got sidetracked on YouTube, as it's very easy to do on a slow day. And I put in this hot versus hot and cold thing. I started watching that and showing a few people at work. And then I found out the name of the band. We never knew. We never worked out the name of the band. And I found it was Los Colorados. And so I typed in their name into YouTube and started looking at it. And there is just, they've got an album, okay, a genuine album that you can download of covers of classic songs like Highway to Hell by AC/DC. They've got that. But the guy is playing the briefcase instead of drums. Okay, he's genuinely hitting a briefcase. And at the end, he starts like stands up and starts like bashing it. And he's like going crazy, but he's hitting just a briefcase. They've got, as I say, Let It Be, the polka version. There's a whole list of songs. If anybody just wants to get out there, I mean, we might put it up on the Twitter account just because it's great. And everybody should at least enjoy
sure.
a little bit of Los Colorados. We'll set them up to play. We'll have them playing us out of the show today, man. Show a little bit of faith to Ukraine to help out England tonight. That'll be the tenuous footballing link that we'll use to describe it, to have it. But yeah,
I like that though. That works for me.
We'll have a little bit of Los Colorados at the end of the show today. There's plenty more still to come, Raf. You didn't mention it yesterday, and obviously I failed to mention obviously the big nights of football from Major League Soccer in the playoffs. I guess setting up the playoffs. This midweek, the Seattle Sounders We're basically at the same position as we started the week. Sounders getting boxed by Vancouver. I mean, truly blown out in a 4-1 defeat. Does this make you worry? Raph, you've been worried about the Sounders all along, but does this kind of, are you going to use this as a point to illustrate the softness that in a key crunch game where they can book their place in the playoffs, they completely failed to rise to the occasion and got annihilated by a Cascadia Cup rival as well. Not only that, but this is a team that, now you're going into this game as a Sounders fan, as all Sounders, as all Whitecaps and as all Timbers fans do, desperately wanting to get something over your local rivals in that in the search for the Cascadia Cup. So you've got to be extremely disappointed as a Sounders fan that how poor they were, how easily bypassed they were in this game.
Well, you can be disappointed, but I mean, you're going to comfortably kind of clinch the playoffs soon. And I think that that's kind of, I wouldn't worry about that. You know, what I would worry about as a fan and what you should have been worried about as a fan for the past couple of years now is what is our success in the postseason? And I say postseason, I know it's a very American term, but that's
slim
that's
to none.
What it is, isn't it?
It's slim to none though, isn't it?
Right, it sums it up perfectly. It's where they have been stumbling. It's where they kind of really show their colors and really showcase what I mean when I say that the Seattle Sounders are soft. They don't have that real instinctual kind of ultimate competitor inside them that's going to push through and kind of rise to the occasion on big occasions to deliver the goods. And I firmly believe that. It's not like I have a hatred of Seattle Sounders. I like them. I think they're generally, you know, they're a cool team. You know, for a green team as well. You know, I'm not the fondest, you know, of the color green, but I dig Seattle, the city. It's one of my favorite cities in the country. I've been there. I love the rain. You know, like
I love weather, don't you?
Specifically because of the rain. I grew up in the desert for 20 something years. Like I want to get out. I want to see rain. Anyways, but for reals, I do think they're a little bit soft. I don't think Dempsey's going to help them that much come playoff time.
Wow. Do you think Dempsey's peaked? You know, I remember, what was it? Last May before the move to Tottenham, we were all talking about kind of, oh man, Dempsey, like, whoa, this is his time, this is his moment. Liverpool want him. Like, this is the time for Clint Dempsey to join a Champions League, a UEFA Cup kind of side, to start playing on the big stages in European football and showing that, because he had a stellar two seasons before that, didn't he? I mean, absolutely awesome his final 2 years at Fulham. And I remember discussing it on the show a lot, talking about, you know, where's he going to go, who he should end up with. Is he right to be playing on the big stage and getting all of this credit for his performances? Is it he who is just single-handedly pulling Fulham along and keeping them on that elevated position in the Premier League? And really, that has died and gone in the space of about 18 months now. You know, Tottenham fizzled out. For the buzz of going to Tottenham fizzled out for Dempsey. You know, scoring against United at Old Trafford, yes, great moment for him. But now, after that, you know, you're struggling to hand-pick out moments at Tottenham that aren't based around Gareth Bale, let alone find any that are involved around Clint Dempsey. Obviously, the move to Seattle, you know, you got the big pop of him returning, but he's been out on injuries, just got back from injury, of course, now. But the stories in Seattle have still been, you know, Obafemi Martins joining this season, and obviously EJ and the quality that he's shown at the end of this season. And really, a lot of the performances have come down to Eddie Johnson in that Seattle side, you know, getting the goals at the big moments. And again, it seems like, do you think the pop around Dempsey in Seattle has been and gone already? I mean, we're not seeing his face, obviously because he's not been playing recently, but we're not seeing his face plastered around everywhere as it once was, obviously, in that first week. He hasn't become that immediate poster child for Major League Soccer, from what I can tell, this side of the Atlantic. I'm wondering if there's still that pop there on your side, Raph. You still feeling that at all, or has it been and gone?
No, I mean, like you said, he's kind of dropped off the map for me. And obviously, I'm sure it's probably because he's not playing. I hope it's because he's not playing juice, to be honest. But Yeah, no, he's kind of just dropped off the radar for us. And I mean, it's just a mess. I mean, again, I don't think it's going to, this season's almost a wash for him, I guess. And it's pretty much because of the timing of his move, how, you know, how much time there's left in the season, that sort of thing. I don't think he'll be judged too much on his first season here, primarily because the American soccer fan are pretty forgiving to their you know, potential heroes and stars. I think you brought up a good point. I wonder, Juice, just how much more time, you know, Dempsey has to like be performing at his peak, basically. I'm not sure whether he's going to be able to bring that to you know, the national stage if he's not really pushed on a regular basis. And I don't think he'll be pushed on a regular basis here in MLS at the Seattle Sounders.
So do you think that's going to be a big impact on the U.S. men's national team then, especially going into a World Cup?
Yep. I completely. Well, I mean, I think that it's probably his best chance this cycle. Hopefully he's probably, I mean, ideally he's got in mind kind of the long-term goal of, you know, maximizing his play and potential for the World Cup in the next 8 months. And I'm going to let it slide, I guess. I think a lot of people will kind of sweep the initial move over time from Dempsey under the rug, and really kind of look forward towards, you know, next season more the World Cup. We'll see how that goes. That's asking a lot.
It's going to be interesting, the situation with Clint Dempsey. And Dempsey, of course, has had a very wild ride indeed. A man who's obviously had a very wild ride in football. We were talking about him earlier in the week, Cristiano Ronaldo. You may remember an incident from pre-season, Raf, okay, where during a pre-season game down at Florida in Sun Life Stadium, a fan ran onto the pitch and hugged Ronaldo.
Right, and hugged him.
And they were kind of chatting and stuff, and then he was dragged away by security, and, you know, probably the greatest moment in a fan's life, really, in that fan's life. And to him, it's probably worth it. Like, I was on the pitch and I hugged Ronaldo. You know, for him, it's probably worth kind of the legal proceedings that he's now going through. Unfortunately for him, he is going through those legal proceedings for breaking the security barrier and running onto the pitch. But, and this is, you know, we talk about like footballers being in a completely different world.
Yeah.
Completely bizarre. Cristiano Ronaldo wrote a letter to the Miami State attorneys asking them not to press charges against this fan. Wrote Ronald Joka. How would you say that? G-J-O-K-A. Joka?
No, we'll go with Joka. I'm not going to try to touch that one.
We'll go with Joka. But and I've got a copy of the letter here, not obviously in my hand, but up on the screen here. And I just want to read out what Cristiano Ronaldo has said. And I want to get your thoughts on what he's kind of said as well in this letter. My name is Cristiano Ronaldo, and I play for Real Madrid. I would start, by the way, if I played for Real Madrid, every single letter with, "Hi, my name's Ollie Wilson, and I play for Real Madrid." It sounds like the start of a bad infomercial, doesn't it? But, "Hi, do you want to get insurance money for a trip or fall you've had? Hi, I'm Ollie Wilson, and I work for Real Madrid." Sorry, let's get past the first sentence. "I was playing at Sun Life Stadium when a fan entered the field. His name is Ronald Joka, a young college student. We hugged and we spoke for a while until security arrived to escort him off the field." It makes it sound like a really tender moment, doesn't it, that?
Yeah.
"We hugged and we spoke like old friends catching up, and then security just came and escorted him off the field. He was not aggressive or violent in any way, capital any. What's more, he did not put up resistance when the security guards and police arrived. As I understand it, he has admitted to his mistake and understands the importance of security. He is a young man of 20 who grew up without a father and was raised by a single mother. He attends Palm Beach State Community College, Florida, with an international student grant." I mean, wow, this Ronaldo's either done his research or they had an in-depth conversation, and this guy kind of got the life story across to Ronaldo in those few seconds on the pitch. "I am concerned because I understand he may face problems with immigration and with his college if the criminal charges against him are not dropped. He was immediately taken to the stadium security area and then spent a day and a half in jail. It seems he appeared before a judge on Monday accompanied by his attorney, who asked for the charges to be dropped, but you chose to ignore his appeal. I understand your position and the importance of enforcing rules and laws. However, I respectfully request that you and your office reconsider this decision and dismiss the two criminal charges this young man faces. I would hate to see him face criminal charges for his mistake. By all accounts, he has a bright future ahead of him, and I'd hate to see his future ruined by an error of judgment. Thank you. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact me directly at any time. Sincerely, Cristiano Ronaldo. Do you think it's a really kind of... I don't know. I do get the feeling this is a really nice move from... Obviously, it's a wonderful move from Ronaldo. Kind of say, look, he didn't cause me any harm. He knows he's made a mistake. But Ronaldo's almost taking not a legal standing on this, as in like trying to represent him as a lawyer. He almost sounds like a father, doesn't he? You know, he's got a great future ahead of him. I'd hate to see this future get... You know he's a good kid. You know he's a good kid. He's not done anything wrong. He just wanted to be close to somebody that he looks up to and reveres. He's a good kid. He's going to school. He's going to get a job. He's going to help you out. Just he's an error of judgment on him. It really does sound like a father kind of talking
Well, I mean, look, man, I think that he's an intelligent man, first off, right? Like, let's be honest. You don't build a brand like his without being somewhat intelligent, being able to kind of hold your own and stand your own ground in front of the face of a ton of people, and being able to read people pretty well. So first off, when he saw this fan kind of running on, I'm sure he's like, you know what? I don't see, you know, a bomb strapped to him. I don't see knives.
I would still be worried, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be more worried in Spain.
Look, the actual hug, if you remember the hug, like it was an awkward hug. But I do recall the, like, couple seconds of, you know, very civilized, kind of calm, you know, discussion that they had. A couple seconds, you know, like, not very many.
Not enough to get all of that information out to him, do you think?
Yeah, not enough time to get by the way, I didn't have a father growing up, Ronaldo. Cristiano. Can I call you Cristiano? I don't think that they got all that way. But what I do think happened was, you know, I'm sure this kid's, you know, lawyer or whatever wrote a letter to Real Madrid or directly to Nike or the fan.
So you think Ronaldo's been kind of prompted into this by the fan asking for his help?
I think the fan's legal kind of, team. I think the fan did reach out and kind of said, look, I've obviously messed up. I'm sorry. I'm asking you as the person who I, you know, essentially... That drove me to do this, and here's why.
You just made me run out there, didn't you? Made me run. I had to, because you're just Cristiano Ronaldo. Sorry.
I think that, you know, Ronnie kind of took the situation as like, well, this is just a great way for me to look good in the public eye. Like, look, I'm going to come to this guy's defense, and I love my fans. See, this is what happens when you're fans of Ronaldo. Like, unfortunately... Here's the downside. He could possibly leave himself open to this, lapse in security again. And next time it could not end so pretty.
It's
that's what I'm saying.
I think it's a nice gesture. I'd like to hope that Ronaldo's kind of done this off his own back a bit. I do wonder about the whole kind of family thing and all that kind of stuff, which obviously makes you think that the guy's obviously kind of contacted Ronaldo or the legal team have or something like that.
Sure.
But no, I think that's really nice for Ronaldo to kind of still get involved and do that. Do you think the Miami state attorneys will drop any charges? I mean, I haven't been able to find whether they've continued or not.
I think so eventually.
No way. Because that means then that a footballer is influencing. That would mean that football is taking a precedent over. And I tell you what, if I was a kind of a governor of a state or something like that, I would not take that. I sound really harsh by saying this because I totally think this guy should be allowed to go free. But can you imagine being a governor and saying, well, I guess if Cristiano Ronaldo, a famous footballer, says, you know, can we drop the charges? We should suddenly drop the charges. I'm not having that. This guy's going down. We're going to make an example of him. 6 years, man.
I see your point, and it would be an easy example, and I think it's also kind of somewhat a necessary example in the sense that, you know, like, you just can't have people doing that. Like, massive sporting events like that, you know, the mob mentality, you can, it's such a kind of fickle knife.
If that had been if that had been in the Camp Nou, I'm just saying that guy wouldn't have got close to Ronaldo, and Ronaldo would have been legging it around that pitch to get away from a fan, you know. Seriously, if that's in a La Liga game, Ronaldo is not standing there and accepting the hug. He is running for his life. Okay, he has no idea. I think it's very lucky, obviously, that this incident takes place in a friendly, and therefore Ronaldo was kind of able to be like, I'm guessing 90% chance that he's not dangerous. I mean, there's still always going to be that 10%, but you know, it's a nice gesture for Ronaldo. It's nice to see him in a slightly different light as well.
Sure, Juice, I got two things for you, man. Just before we wrap up, one, don't forget everybody to hashtag Project Pink. Tweet at us at W Football Daily. Include the hashtag Project Pink. I don't care how many times you send out tweets with a hashtag Project Pink. Just do it. But the only way you're going to get entered into the fantastic competition or drawing for the free, absolutely free. It's a single boot, by the way, guys. Just throwing it out there. I should clarify that. It's not a pair of boots. It's a single boot. But it's the Evo. No, yes, it's a new Evo Speed. And it's signed by Gail Clichy. I've got the documentation for it, and I will send it to you. I will pick one person who uses the hashtag Project Pink, either by tweeting at us, WFootballDaily, or writing on our Facebook wall. That's something that I'm going to do. I think probably Monday, I don't know, maybe we'll push it back a little bit. Again, the Project Pink donation drive is ongoing. It's ridiculous to think that you guys wouldn't just naturally do that. Yeah. Do it for a good cause.
For sure.
Again, that's just one thing, Juice. Moving on. Did you know that I'm about 3 or 4 for with my banker in perfect guessing. Like I have like 3 or 4 90-point weeks, or 90-point collections from my IKTS, Juice. I'm like just nailing this. I am dead on, and that's why I am so successful in my I Know the Score this year. I'm just saying.
Well, you have nothing to do with I Know the Score this week. It's I'm hoping this break is going to kill your momentum completely. Obviously, with no IKTS and no fantasy football either. I am missing the fantasy football. I have to say, I do.
I was hoping that this kind of week off gives me a little bit of extra time to retool my fantasy side and get back into the game because I'm. Whew.
You've got no game ref when it comes to fantasy football. Don't pretend that you have. It's not going to happen. What we can do though is run through some of the games this evening and tell you the ones that we're looking out for. First one that pops out for me in UEFA World Cup qualification: Croatia against Belgium. That. We were talking yesterday about how important a game that is, and Belgium can wrap up being top of their group and securing their place in Brazil 2014. By the way, if you're a betting man, which obviously is not a great thing if you do it too much, but if you do like a little flutter, Belgium and Colombia are the two outside chances for World Cup glory this year, I think. That's how we go. You'll get good odds on that, Raf, I tell you. I know you like a cheeky flutter online, don't you? We've got the Ukraine against Poland. Obviously, the big after effects of that on England's chances. England, of course, take on Montenegro at Wembley tonight. You know that's not sold out as well. Apparently, still tickets available. If I wasn't away for the weekend, I would be grabbing tickets for that. That's for sure. And similarly, the Poland.
That's Montenegro.
Yeah, why not? It's a World Cup qualifier, man. It's two biggest games that England have had in a long time. Similarly, the Poland game's not sold out as well, and I would like to go and watch Robert Lewandowski on Tuesday, so I might be searching the net for some tickets there. Denmark take on Italy will be another tasty tie indeed. Netherlands against Hungary is a dominant force for Netherlands, surely. Germany against Republic of Ireland. Can the luck of the Irish at least salvage some pride against Germany? Sweden-Austria would be a good game as well, I think. That's a lot riding on that one in terms of who's going to be going through with Germany out of that group. Obviously, England against Montenegro. Portugal against Israel. You were saying you liked that one, Raf, yesterday, of course. Mm-hmm. We've also got South American World Cup qualification coming your way. Ecuador, Uruguay is the big one to be looking at. Of course, Venezuela can keep their hopes alive with a win against Paraguay, hoping that Uruguay lose. But otherwise, it really is Uruguay against Ecuador. Although Colombia and Chile can still both fall into that playoff spots depending on results as well. But I'm definitely seeing it being being all coming down to that Ecuador-Uruguay game this weekend. And, of course, Mexico against Panama. I mean, Raf, are you going to be watching the US men's national team game today, or are you going to be looking elsewhere? I know they're at different times, obviously, and it might be a nice break in your Friday to catch it, but there are more important games elsewhere, and it is the USA against Jamaica on home soil. I mean, you're thinking win-win right here. It's you're going to win, and you're already in the World Cup, so it's a win.
Well, we should win. I will be watching it just because it is my nation, and therefore I can make time, and I think it's at like 3:30 my time in the afternoon. So, yeah, I'll still have about 2 hours worth of work to kind of to not waste. We won't call it waste, Juice. We'll just call it to fill. How about that? So, yeah, no, I will be watching United States around that time. I will be more interested in watching Mexico Panama. I think that that'll be a really good game to catch.
Yeah, that will. That's obviously going to be a big test for El Tri as they take on Panama in the Azteca, as we were discussing yesterday with Kim Tate. And we got into all things South American football as well yesterday with Rupert Fryer. A big thanks to all of our guests this week, by the way. It's been a top week. I always find it hard to get completely enthralled in the weeks leading up to these international breaks because they're especially this week, it's been reasonably quiet.
But I gotta thank you, Juice. Like you, I mean, I don't know whether it was you or whether it was the show or what, but I thoroughly had a really good time this week. I thought we maybe weren't talking football nonstop, but the what we were talking about was kind of entertaining for me. I don't know about the people who are listening. As long as they keep listening, or as long as they don't say otherwise, I say we keep going.
Well, of course we're going to keep going. We obviously have World Cup qualification all over the globe tonight. Big games coming all over the place. But my heart is only at one place, and it is at Wembley. I want to see Montenegro get a draw. Leave things nice and open. Make England go and earn it in that final game against Poland. Raf, I've got to ask you before we leave the show today. Are Hodgson's men going to do it? Am I wishful thinking that England are going to be tested completely out of the water in a side without Vucinic and Jovetic that's still kind of off and injured? Are England going to get three points tonight?
Yes, they are, actually. And I don't think it'll be too much of a... I don't know. I get kind of... Not upset, but I just get... Not even irritated, not frustrated. I just don't even pay attention to it. All the little stories about the England camp and who's not showing up and who's can't make it and oh, who said this and that. Montenegro should be a team that you guys breeze over. If you guys don't win this game,
we say that every single time though. This is a team England should walk past, and then guess what? We end up kind of slumping back and defending a 1-0 lead as we get battered for the final half an hour and cling on to 3 points somehow.
I don't know. I'm not even going to try to diagnose your problems and figure out why England suck these days. I'll just let you guys do that. Because you do it enough. There's plenty of, blogs, articles, written online pieces that go into this sort of thing. But no, you guys will get past Montenegro. It won't be very, I don't know.
It's not going to be enthralling. You don't think it'd be nervy?
I think that, potentially you could see a game where you guys get one goal and then you just kind of post up. And then everybody talks crap about how you guys barely scratched by with the 1-0 or something like, you guys are going to make more of this than you really need to. You're going to get by. You'll be fine. And Poland should be
Well, Hodgson has said, you know, go out and play, you know, play football. Don't go out and do usual rubbish. Go out and play a quality game of football. So it'd be interesting to see if they heed his words and go out and maybe put a bit of style on for the fans down at Wembley tonight. It is England against Montenegro. Of course, the US men's national team taking on Jamaica and a whole host of other footballing games as well to get your teeth into this evening. It's do or die time in World Cup qualification. People will be booking their places tonight at the World Cup. And that will all be happening again on Tuesday as we get ready for the final international games that means something before Brazil 2014. Of course, we have the playoffs as well, though, to get through. That will be, as we say in football, squeaky bum time. And on that note, we will leave it there for today. A big thanks to Kristen once again for joining us here on World Football Daily, giving us his thoughts on the England team. And, of course, a look at Gus Poyet's trip to Sunderland as he takes over the reins at Paulo Di Canio's former club, a club in absolute a nightmare situation right now, where they stand and where their form is in the Premier League. We'll be back with Premier League talk and all the other major leagues from around the globe next week once the international break is over. But for now, enjoy the football this evening. Find something to do on Saturday and Sunday. College football's there and American football's there. It's still football, just not as we know it. We'll have a great weekend and we'll see you at the same time on Monday.